Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And welcome to another episode of the Inspired Table Podcast. I'm your host, Jordana Levine. And today I'm chatting with a pretty woke, conscious man. His name is Blake Worrell Thompson. It was such a privilege having him on the show. What an eloquent speaker. You probably know Blake through his success in the fitness and personal training industry. He had some great businesses called 6 Weeks to Sexy and 6 Weeks to Shredded. But in recent months, he's transitioned into personal development coaching. Now, if you've been following Blake through the years that he was in fitness, you wouldn't be surprised by this transition because he's always had the most amazing golden nuggets that he shares through his social accounts, and he's been weaving personal development into his fitness and training work for a really long time. So this transition isn't a surprise, but now he works with clients to help them break through their barriers and has a look at the things that are holding them back from having more success. If you've been listening to my new podcast show, The Middle, with my beautiful co-host, Holly Azzopardi, you'll probably notice that she name drops Blake's name all the time. that's because they're working together. She's currently going through one of his coaching programs. And I know from the conversations that I've had with her, and I trust her opinion very highly, that she really values the work that they do together. It was such a thrill to have Blake on the show, to inject some beautiful masculine energy into the podcast. We talk about limiting beliefs and how they can block us from reaching our goals. We chat about Blake's experience with Vipassana, which is the 10-day silent meditation. I've just found that fascinating. I'm so intrigued by Vipassana. I've always wanted to do it. So it was really great to hear Blake's perspective on it. And we also dive into the transition and what that involved from moving from the fitness industry into personal development and how it was that personal development became Blake's focus. If you enjoy this interview, I would love you to take a screenshot of it on your phone and share it on your Instagram stories. You can tag me at Jordana Levine and tag Blake at Blake Worrell Thompson. Why don't you tell me where you're at the moment? Because I know you've had such a big shift in the last, 12 months. And it seemed really kind of seamless watching it all unfold online. But maybe you can kind of tell us the reality of that and how your life's done a little bit of a 180 flip.
I love the whole seamless approach.
Effortless.
It has been how good would that be? It's been anything but to be and that's kind of the nature of your entrepreneurial life or the business owner life, is that it never goes as smoothly as you hope, but it also builds a lot of resilience and character in people as they navigate their way through it. But yeah, for me, after I did personal training for 15 years and probably at the 12-year mark, maybe 13 years, so the last 18 months to 2 years, I started to really dry up from a passion point of view with that. And personally, I think I was pretty lucky to, find a career in the first place at 18 that really I was passionate about, and that passion maintained for 12 years. So saw that through for 12 years, and then really started to, being in the personal development space, evolve myself. And as I evolved, what I wanted and the direction that I wanted to head started to change. So the nature, I think, of a good coach, in the personal training space, is that they start to look beyond the four walls of you know, the gym and a workout and beyond nutrition and the role that that plays. And for me, I was feeling a sense that I needed to go beyond that and start to have a bigger impact on people. And naturally what started to evolve there was that I wanted to understand human behavior, how we go about things and how to really help people break through everything that's holding them back. So 2 years ago now, I dived into NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and that has been, I guess, the backbone to all the work I've done since. I've done a thing called Spiral, which I know you know a fair bit about, and you've got some friends in that space. And you know, I'm constantly looking at ways to help support my clients and help them kind of overcome barriers that are holding them back from having more success, whatever that looks like for them. So what is it, 9 months ago now, I shut down my business in Sydney, 6W2S, which you know, was a massive surprise for a lot of people. Because I literally just shut the doors and didn't try to sell it. I didn't, you know, try to kind of make anything of it. I just decided that it wasn't serving me anymore. And, you know, to be honest, a number of clients who know me really well and have become good friends saw the writing on the wall a little bit earlier, and we kind of had a couple of chats of it. And then I just bit the bullet, shut it down, went and did Vipassana, which is a 10-day meditation, and then moved to Melbourne and looked to start kind of rebuilding myself in a you know, in a way, and kind of changing my direction as well.
So very brave is the first thing I want to say. I definitely want to talk about Vipassana, so we will get to that. But when you had made the decision to shut down SW2S, is that right? Six W2S. Yeah, yeah. I'm like trying to do the acronym in my head. Was that something that had been like tugging at you for a little while and you hadn't really kind of consciously made the decision? Or was it just like, yep, doing it, and then it was just a matter of time for how long it took to actually implement that?
No, it would have been a 12-month process. And I think for a business owner, obviously you are in that space, is you play a lot of different scenarios out in your head. And for me, I had put thousands of hours into the business. And, you know, at one point we really were kind of, you know, the go-to program in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, which, you know, anyone who knows the East knows it's a really competitive space for all things health and fitness. And we were kind of, you know, up and about and the hot new kind of program. And then, yeah, I think for 12 months you kind of go, well, you know, I've put all this effort in and it's just going to amount to nothing, you know, if I close the doors. And then you've got this pride, this ego, all these stories that you play out in your head. So it was back and forth for a while. And then I think once the decision had been made, I felt like a massive lift off my shoulders. And it all kind of just happened a lot easier when I did make that decision. But it was getting to that point that was the sticky bit. And as soon as I made the decision, there was kind of no turning back.
Yeah. And that for me, like, that's such a sign of being in alignment with what you need to be doing. When you feel that sense of lightness and relief when the decision's actually been made and everything starts to flow and shifts, and it does become, for lack of a better word, a little bit more easeful, you know?
Absolutely. And I personally have really struggled to comprehend how people do a job that they don't like. And, you know, I don't want to kind of be ignorant in not alluding to the fact that it is actually quite hard for a lot of people to find their passion. And, you know, I wish it was easy where people could just flick the switch and find it. But, you know, I did it for a 12-month period there, and it really ate at my soul. And, you know, a conversation I had with a friend recently, actually Joey, who you know, we were talking about it. And one of the reasons I couldn't get away with it was because I was in front of 30 to 100 people every day, and they can kind of see right through me, because, you know, as the trainer, you're kind of facilitating these sessions. And I said, you know, I was saying to him, like, how do people do this? And he goes, well, mate, at the end of the day, like, most of these people are in front of computers. They can get away with it. But for me, people could read straight through me and just see that I have the same energy and excitement that I have been known for in this space for, you know, 12 to 14 years.
Yeah, absolutely. You also happened to be getting up in the very wee hours of the morning when it was very cold and dark.
I know that doesn't work for you, but for 14 years, getting up at 4:30, 4:45 wasn't a problem, because I, you know, anyone who knows me over an extended period of time knows how much I did love it. So when everyone's like, how do you get up at that time in the morning and how do you stay motivated? Well, when you're living on point and in alignment, motivation is there. It's not something you need to really cultivate. Yeah, you have your moments, but, you know, I was lucky. Motivation was there through thick and thin. And, you know, I think as a business owner, one of the things you do need is to be on point with passion and purpose, because you're going to have those moments that are pretty hairy. And if you aren't aligned and you're not really loving what you're doing, then you're going to find reasons to, you know, shut down the business or choose otherwise. So that passion, purpose and alignment always kept me on point through, you know, plenty of hairy moments.
And I guess the other thing is, like you said before, like when you're in service with people and you're facilitating what was basically trying to drive motivation and passion and purpose for the workout or the, you know, goals they'd set for their health or whatever with these people, if you can't hold that vibrational standard simply by being there, then it's really hard for them to be able to tap into that as well, because, you know, you are the example, you are the leader in that space.
Absolutely. And George, honestly, you know, I was lucky enough to make really good friends in that space. And one of the things that really kept people coming back to 6 weeks was the culture that we had created. And, you know, I think that's a collective group, but absolutely I had to lead by example. And in that last 12 months where I wasn't my best self and I wasn't on point, the culture started to kind of change a little bit. And I think, you know, that's a byproduct of me not being all heart and soul into it. So it really was, you know, a talking point and one that kept people in it and really vested, was how good that culture was for the majority of the time that 6 weeks was up and running.
Yeah. What I noticed with you from like way back in the day, and I don't know if you know this, Blake, but God, it must have been, I want to say 12, 13 years ago, maybe 13 years ago, my flatmate at the time, still my friend, was Naomi Wilson. And she used to train with you like way, way, way back in the day when I think you were working out of Rose Bay, I want to say, like somewhere on O'Sullivan Road. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's spot on, yeah.
Yeah. And even back in the day, I noticed how much kind of personal development lingo you would weave into your social posts. And I thought it was very kind of up-leveled for the masculine community at the time, because there wasn't much of that happening, and not in the fitness space. So, and it's obviously evolved as you've evolved, but was that something that was you were kind of brought up with, or is it something that you had to discover for yourself?
No, it's definitely not something I was brought up with. And, you know, anyone that kind of talks about who I was 10 years ago makes me cringe a little bit, but that's all part of growing up, I guess. And I've done a lot more growing up, I think, over the kind of last 2 to 3 years in particular. But for me, personal development just came hand in hand with personal training to a certain degree. And I also think, you know, I've had some kind of pretty solid challenges in my childhood in terms of our family dynamic, and, you know, that kind of stemmed into the 20s and still is a challenge now. But, you know, I've grown up and got on with it. But it also gave me a sense of hope, personal development did, and an outlet. And that became, you know, my go-to when I was struggling. And it's always been, for me, hand in hand with the personal training and given me an opportunity to expand. And I think you know, with me, like, my highest value is growth. And I can't imagine ever standing still for too long, because if I'm not growing and I'm not progressing, I kind of feel a bit dead inside. So it's always going to be there. It probably doesn't play the same role that it did, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. I probably developed quite the attachment to personal development. And as I've said to, you know, Holly, one of our mutual friends, numerous times, it's, you know, it's easy to be addicted to that because it is quite shiny and it is quite fun, and there's communities that come with it. There's a lot of attachment and addiction. And one of the big things for me over the last couple of years is, you know, as you said, I was, you know, just as known for my personal development as I was for my personal training, to a certain degree. And I've wanted to kind of steer away from that a little bit, because I found myself taking on way too much personal development and not actually integrating and implementing those learnings into my life.
Yes.
It was, you know, done from one course and coach and mentor to the next, and just this shiny object syndrome of looking at
it's so common, Blake.
Because at the end of the day, George, like, that's the exciting bit, the learnings, the integration bit. You know, when I talk about integrating, like bringing it into your life and really implementing it, isn't as shiny and fun. And I think that's one of the reasons people jump around. You know, so for me, over the last couple of years, I only did Spiral in January last year. I did Vipassana in October. So almost 18 months now, I've only done one course, which for me, you know, I would have been doing probably six at one point, and all the endless ebooks and the books and the courses and the coaches. And I've really wound it back to trying to heighten my self-awareness, which, you know, was really, really, really poor despite all the, you know, personal development work I was doing. It was horrific 3 or 4 years ago. And I've used that and, you know, journaling and self-reflection as the biggest tool for me to be able to identify what's working for me and what's not. Because up until that point, I was pretty much building layers of, like, I want to be the Tony Robbins, and I want to be this, and I want to be that, and, you know, building all these certain parts, but not integrating and not really peeling back the layers and the blocks and the trauma and the triggers of my own to come raw, real version of me.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so common, and I guess it's part of the process of going inside, is all that shadow that you have to dive into. And it's the shadow work. And people call it, you know, spiritual bypassing, which I did for so long, where, like you said, I would read all of the books one after another and then have no time to not only implement but integrate what I'd learned, you know? So I'm the same. I've really pared back from the learning side of it and just really trying to do the application part of it, because that's what's going to make the change. So tell us about Vipassana. I mean, I know you can't say lots and lots of details, and it is a very personal experience, but I'm so fascinated by it for a few reasons. But I think the thing that fascinates me the most is the fear that comes up in me when I think about being silent for 10 days.
Yeah. So one of our mutual friends, Zoe, was the person who kind of steered me in that direction.
Yeah.
And for me, I've been very much a adrenaline-based, kind of hyperactive, over-the-top kind of guy for most of my life. So anything but grounded. And that's been a focus of mine for kind of the last 12 to 18 months, is trying to ground myself, get in my body, and, you know, like I said before, use my own internal compass to improve my self-awareness, you know, intuition, things like that, which is polar opposite to who I was 3, 4 years ago, when I was very much the kind of warrior, masculine, in his head, unconscious, trying to kind of force his way to success. So this is probably, well, no, not even probably, this is the first moment really in my life where stillness and silence took place. Like, I, you know, prior to that, there was very little time for self in terms of just being and self-reflecting. And Zoe, obviously being quite savvy with intuition and picking up, you know, what would help integrate you know, the better version of me kind of alluded to the fact that it was a good idea for me to go and do it. And, you know, I, to a certain degree, pride myself on facing the fear.
Mm.
So when everyone comes to me and goes, Blake, oh my God, like, how did you sit still and be silent for 10 days? I can't do that. If they know me, they know that I am the exact person who is polar opposite to anything stillness and silence.
Yeah.
Like, it just, it's not in me. So when everyone talks about how, you know, they always need to be moving and doing this, I'm like, I get you. You still need to go and do it.
Yeah.
So,
and more it, so than the people who are comfortable sitting still. On,
Totally. So, yeah, there's a really good kind of quote out there that if you can't meditate or don't have time to meditate for 20 minutes, you need to meditate for an hour,
which is
the exact round kind of Vipassana. So I, you know, in transition between moving from Sydney to Melbourne, went and did it for 10 days. And a number of reasons that it jumped out at me. Like, I love to be challenged. I love to do new things. And I love to kind of, one, be challenged in a physical sense. But now, as I look to tap into different ways of mentally strengthening myself, that is a mental strength. Very different for me doing a, you know, 24-hour adventure race or a 50-kilometer adventure race, which has a very strong mental component and a physical. This is just plain mental. And it was the most challenging and insightful thing I've ever done. And I'm looking, you know, to line up to do it again this year. Because when you sit in that stillness and silence, your inner wisdom just speaks volumes and so loud and so clear. And the clarity on my thoughts was like nothing I've ever experienced before. And, you know, in all honesty, one of the things that I've kind of noticed is that to a certain degree, I haven't really trusted myself in the past. And, you know, there's a number of reasons for that taking place. But one of the reasons is because I haven't really ever been in my body. You know, I've been in my head. I've been flying in. To trust my inner compass, my intuition, my gut, my heart has been something that I've never really connected with. You know, I know when we're born, we're connected with all of it, but it was pretty quickly kind of, you know, had me kind of moving towards my head as a safe, comfortable place as opposed to being in my body. So, yeah, I mean, it ended up being the most challenging thing. And that first day was excruciating, you know, for someone who doesn't sit still to go straight into 12 hours of meditation.
The physical side of it as well. Yeah, the sitting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to get back. I opted for a back support thing, which made a massive difference to my lower back because I had a bit of pressure there. So you can kind of get back support, but you are looking at, you know, 11 to 12, I think it's 11 hours a day of meditation. And I remember on the lunch break, because it's silent. It's not only is it silent, but you can't make eye contact with anyone. So it really is just you and your thoughts for 10 days straight.
And you can't read and you can't write.
Well.
Oh. Or can
technically
you?
Speaking, no, you can't. If you have a rebellious streak in you like me, you may. So I want to fully respect Vipassana and everything that it's set out for. And I just have this streak in me that doesn't really like rules. So I chose to take in my journal.
Okay.
And it, for me, was the best decision I ever made, because I wanted to get everything out ahead onto paper.
Totally.
And yeah, I might have been cheating the system a little bit, but the clarity in those thoughts, I wrote 28 pages of like crystal clear, pure gold thoughts, and just helped me like unlock, you know, patterns that have seen my relationships break down in the past, had me, you know, different business struggles, you know, troubles with friends, family. It just like all became so clear. And in between the breaks, you know, you'd go and do a 2 or 3 hour block of meditation at once, and then you'd go back, have breakfast, lunch, dinner. I'd quickly shoot back to my room and jot down everything that was in my head, go to have dinner, go back and get my next set of, you know, wisdom and learnings in the Vipassana. But that first day, I remember, you know, on the lunch break, going for a bit of a walk, and across the mountain, you know, you're in the Blue Mountains in Sydney, across the other side, I could see the trail where I did a 50K run a couple of years ago, an adventure race. And I remember in that moment just going, I would much prefer her to be over there running that kilometers than going through what I'm currently going through.
So if day one was the most challenging for you, where do you feel like you started to shift? Or did you? Was it all challenging?
No, it wasn't at all. So the first day, if you're looking at it on a timeline, the first day was by far the longest day of my life. And then I felt like by day two, that kind of halved. And then by day three, that kind of halved again.
Mm.
So because I just couldn't get into that really kind of dreamy state of meditation where time just goes. I kept my watch on and I'd kind of open my eyes and I was like, shit, it's been 15 minutes. It feels like 4 hours. Like, it was horrific.
Yeah.
But once you get over that stage, you really start to get into, these deep kind of feelings. And I remember, might have been day 5 or 6, just this absolute moment of bliss where I was like, I get it. I now understand why the monks do what they do. And this feeling of bliss that is just like all over my body is by far the most amazing sensation I've ever had, and I don't want to ever see anyone else again because they're going to ruin it.
Totally. So what's the feeling on day 10? Is it I could stay like this forever, or is it relief? Like, what swept over you on that last day?
There was a sense of relief. I mean, I hadn't seen my, you don't see anyone, but yeah. For me, most important, I hadn't seen my girlfriend for 10 days and I kind of wanted to, sense of, a part of me was concerned about going back into reality because you do find this complete, your whole nervous system is just settled. It's like it's been bubbling for, for me for 35 years and all of a sudden it's just settled. Everything's in place and you are just the most authentic, grounded version of you, and you don't want anything to ruffle the feathers. So there was a sense of like, oh, I've made it. Then there was a sense of like, oh, I don't know which part of this real world I want to go back out and kind of explore and sit with. So it was a bit of everything. And for me, it was also like a sense of, I was quite proud of the fact that I'd got through, because a lot of people, of the dorm that we had, which was I think 8 people, 3 had gone by the time we'd finished up. So it does challenge a lot of people who can't see it through. And to be fair, I think the fact that I journaled really did help me get me through. I think I still would have got through, but it can kind of send you a little bit loopy, and I don't want to go against the rules, but I'll quietly and subtly hint at, people should consider a journal.
Yeah.
Just don't get caught with it. But it really did.
Did you bribe your roommates? How did they stay silent?
Oh,
I mean, they are silent.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to talk.
Now, this really aggravated me, but I was quiet because you're in a dorm and you've got your own cubicle. But someone in my dorm told one of the teachers. So on day 8, he comes back to me because there's no talking. So this is the first time someone's approached me. He's like, "Blake, I just want to be clear that you've handed in everything that you need to hand in." I was like, fuck, someone's thrown me under the bus here. So after 8 days, I gave my journal in. But to be honest, by that stage, the thoughts and everything that I needed to take from that experience had kind of started to dry up. So I'd got it out. But yeah,
that's
pretty
so
average
interesting.
For someone to throw me
out. Yeah, not cool. I remember talking to Zoe after she'd just gotten back from a Vipassana, and she told me about all these amazing ideas that had come up on like day 4. And I said to her, I think the thing that would scare me the most is when I have that clarity of thought without being able to document it, is like remembering it on day 10 or day 11 when I get out and being able to do something with it. Like, it would torture me if I had this like real clarity and then didn't know what to do with it. So I would really love the opportunity to write it down. But Zoe's response was, if it's a thought that is going to be of service to you and it's something that you need, it will come back to you.
She told me the same thing. And I chose otherwise.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, I that would actually send me a bit spare is like, oh my God, I've just had this amazing idea. It's day four and yeah. somehow I've got to sit with it for six. Like,
yes.
I feel like I wouldn't be able to let that go and kind of move forward with other thoughts or other, you know, learnings that want to come up and come out.
Yeah.
Because I'd be so fixated on trying to hold on to that thought so that I remember it for day 10.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know there's a reason that they ask you not to bring anything in, but I feel that the value I got from, you know, sneaking a journal in and writing it all out was just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. So tell me, have you been able to find a similar feeling and a similar clarity after, like on the outside?
Not so much. For me, I mean, there's so many things now that the adventurous kind of part of me that always wants to try something new is interested in everything, plant-based medicine, breath work, float tanks, whatever it is, try something, you know, I'll try everything once. For me, a big part, and it's probably the masculine in me, is like, okay, here are the three or four real strong learnings that came from that. I'm now going to go and implement and integrate them into my life. And when I feel like they're really integrated, I'm going to come back for my next set of learnings.
Mm.
So, you know, three or four reoccurring kind of themes and thoughts that were so crystal clear in Vipassana, I then go, well, I'm going to Melbourne. I'm starting fresh. You know, I do have a bit of time on my side. I really want to kind of lean into these, implement, integrate, and, you know, where there's kind of blocks and trauma, et cetera, get those aside and kind of move forward with them. So, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with that as a, you know, don't take on another course or anything. Go and integrate these things that are coming from within you, mm-hmm. not external, you know, voices and forces that are trying to help you create stuff, but these deep, entrenched things that are coming from within, go and implement, integrate, and when you feel you're ready for your next set of learnings, come back.
Yeah.
That's kind of been my thought process around it.
Yeah. Well, something I did want to talk to you about, because I think it comes up a lot with all types of personal development work, and I'm interested if it came up for you, is this idea of our limiting beliefs and them holding us back from what could essentially be our potential, reaching our potential. And I know that you have a little bit of work that you do in the coaching space around accessing people's limiting beliefs and clearing them or releasing them. What kind of language would you use around that?
Both. I tend to use, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's about an awareness of what your story is and what your belief is and then kind of cracking through that space. Is that right?
Totally. You nailed it. So for me, I guess my path with that has been as challenging as any, and I think you've got to kind of walk the steps yourself first before you decide to implement or help others. And, you know, as I've said a couple of times, I really was the most unaware, unconscious human, just kind of floating around. And over the last couple of years, done what I can to really heighten that awareness and self-awareness. And yeah, I'm a big believer that it kind of starts with heightening the awareness, taking ownership, and also having an understanding of how us as humans work. So, you know, when it comes to the pillars of my coaching programs, whether it's a coaching program or one-on-one, I'll always start there, because without that ownership and awareness, I think it's kind of hard to move forward. So being the observer of your own thoughts, feelings, actions, patterning, programming, those type of things, and also starting to get clarity on what it is that you want and seeing where there's misalignment is really important. So for example, if you know you're looking to lose 10 kilos and that's a really strong driver for you, but yet you're making food choices, you know, on weekends or eating out that aren't helping, then you've got friction and you've got two forces going against each other. And that is where we start to kind of unpack it. and make sense of why. And what I would have traditionally done, and what a lot of coaches who don't think do, is, you know, finger pointing. Oh, you don't have enough willpower. You don't have enough, you know, motivation. You're a procrastinator. On the surface, kind of, it isn't that too, you know, it isn't too far from the truth. But on a deeper level and a deeper understanding, it's never about the motivation, the procrastination, the willpower, you know, those type of things. It's always something deeper. So when someone works with me, the last thing I want to do is be that coach who's like, oh, you need to toughen up. You need more work. Like, all I'm doing is shoving the guilt and shame and the judgment further down their throat that they've got because they aren't staying in alignment with their goal. And all I'm probably going to do is create disconnection where they're like, oh, shit, I haven't done my homework again. And Blake's going to tell me off. Like, that we don't achieve anything with that. So my big thing around being the observer of your own actions, thoughts, beliefs, patterning is look at it with interest and curiosity instead of judgment, guilt, shame, whatever it may be. Mm. And, you know, on the surface, people go, oh, so you're letting them off the hook. And it's like, well, no, if you think about it properly, I'm actually holding them heaps more accountable. I'm holding them compassionately accountable because we are going to stay with that habit, belief, pattern, program until we've got to the bottom of it, till we've got to the root cause and we've cleared it. Whereas the old approach is like, oh, you're holding them accountable by telling them off. Well, not really, because you tell them off, they develop more guilt, shame, and then they go back with no sense of understanding of self, and, you know, we'll probably come back and tell you a lie next time. So it's actually a different form of compassionate accountability where we're like, nah, we're staying here, and I'm not telling you off, I'm not telling you you've done wrong, I'm holding you accountable from a compassionate place until we've cleared this problem.
Yeah, and from that space we can start to rebuild your level of worth and deservingness of what it is you're trying to create, rather than shut you down for it.
Yeah, spot on.
I think that's gold. I've thought a lot. I've been thinking a lot about limiting beliefs in terms of, you know, manifestation lately, like, you know, what it is that you want to create, which is essentially what you're doing when you're coaching someone to reach a goal. And I've been thinking a lot about, because I'm a little bit obsessed with crime shows, Blake, like they're my guilty pleasure, and I've been watching a lot lately that have con men in them, you know, like someone where the whole story is about the con, and basically what happens when you're being conned by a con man is that they're building a reality for you to see and setting up parameters of what you think is the reality. Right. And I've started to realize that that's what we do with ourselves when we're trying to create something in the future, is we only see what's in front of us. And that can be a con that's been implemented by our own story or our own belief of what is possible. So it's like you can only create what you can see and what you imagine is in front of you. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so totally. And to take it a step further, you're actually only going, for most of us, you know, not you, George, because you're on a different page, but for most of us, we're only going to create what we've already created.
Yes.
Because we create what's familiar. So if you want to create something new, you're going to have to change the story. And for most people, they'll never do that. And that's why change is hard, because the way that our bodies are set up is, you know, homeostasis in terms of balance wants us to just do what's familiar. So whenever you do something that's outside of that, your body's, you know, to a certain degree is going, hang on, come back to homeostasis. Don't stress out our system through change. And it has these ways of, you know, telling you about your beliefs, your patterning, your programming, you know, finding ways to self-sabotage your success because it wants to bring you into what it knows as familiar and what it can kind of sit as, you know, the homeostasis, the comfortable place, as opposed to creating change, which is bad for you, but your brain doesn't like, your brain's not really interested in that. It's kind of more interested in what's familiar, what's safe, and what's comfortable. So to create something new going forward, you need to challenge the story that you're already telling yourself.
Mm. And do you think that coaching helps with that because you're getting a perspective that's outside of yourself? Like, is that what Absolutely. You feel your role is?
100%. And they know that, and I say it pretty early on, is most people in their initial stages, like when they leave coaching with me, I want them to have the tools where they can question themselves and feel empowered. They don't always have to go to a coach. But, you know, I've said this to a number of mates and even, you know, girlfriends you know, family even over the years, is they're like, so why don't you ask your friends for advice? And I kind of come back to a couple of friends I ask for advice, but not many. And there's a number of reasons for that. But a big part of that is when you're asking people for advice, you're often going to get conditioned advice. So you need to be able to ask someone for advice that doesn't have any attachment to you. So for example, if, you know, let's say you start date, you know, I don't even know your relationship status, probably don't need to talk about it now, but let's say that you start dating and you ask your best friend.
It's undetermined, friend, Blake.
You ask your best friend what, you know, he or she thinks. If there's any kind of conditioning around there in terms of she's worried about losing you as a best friend, or, you know, you're not going to spend the same amount of quality time, then her decision-making and how she plays that out is already going to be altered. So for me, when I'm asking for someone's advice, I don't want it to be conditional, e.g., if you do what's best for you, well, it's actually having a negative impact on me or our friendship. I don't want it to be, you know, just a case of opinions jumping, well, here's my trauma and my baggage, I'm just going to pass it on to you when you ask for your opinion.
Yeah.
And then I want it to be this neutral space. And to be honest, the best coaches don't necessarily give me their opinion. They're asking me the right questions, which have me thinking beyond my current way of thinking and questioning my beliefs.
Yeah.
So that's, for me, the type of people that I choose to seek out when I'm looking for advice. And I think a really challenging one for a lot of people is asking your parents for advice, because you are a byproduct of your parents. You know, 95% of who we are is unconscious, and most of that's created in the imprint period, so from 0 to 7 years. And the biggest influence in that period is your parents. So while you ask your parents for advice, you know, respectfully, they're the ones that kind of got you in this shit in the first place, because you're carried most of who they are. So again, you know, interesting. And it's fair, they're role models. They've got 20, 30, 40 years on us. So you can understand why they could be deemed a good role model. But the mess that we've got ourselves in, without, you know, taking away from the fact it's ours to own, is often part of, you know, creation in that first 7 years.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And also their need to self-correct through you. You know, I made this mistake, so don't you make it. Can you fix it for me? No, I can't.
Yeah,
so
100%.
Is there a particular area that you really enjoy coaching people in? Like, what is there, like a sort of something that you've kind of fallen into, perhaps naturally, or perhaps it was a path that you wanted to take with the personal development coaching? Is there like a specialty for you?
Well, it's, you know, I'm at this point, I'm loving the people that I'm drawing in. You know, I'm lucky that from a coaching point of view, I don't attract people who are just there to vent and to rant, to have another kind of set of ears that they can just dump on.
Mm.
I really am attracting, you know, in a very fortunate way, people who are willing to do the work, who take pretty good ownership. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, it's a level of fulfillment that they're looking for, and also looking to have more success in more areas. So the way that I see most of our society and limiting beliefs that our society has is that you can't have it all. And it's either this or it's that. A lot of people come to me and go and want to kind of challenge that way of thinking and challenge the social condition and go, you know what, my career and my relationship are good, but I'm struggling here. Because how you do one thing is how you do all. And there's going to be limiting beliefs and patterning and programming that don't just affect, you know, your body composition, but actually affect your relationship as well. So when we are finding this kind of, you know, what I call blind spots, these limiting beliefs and patterning that these guys can't see, but they know something is stopping them from having success, then it often filters through different areas of their life. So, you know, in terms of my niche, you know, there's a lot of interest in kind of me working exclusively with men. But I think the nature of, you know, my 15 years in the personal training space, and I guess anyone, again, who knows me well knows that I have a lot of female friends. It's kind of a bit of everything at the moment, and I love just connecting with, you know, people and helping them have more success and overcome what's blocking them. So, you know, I'm lucky that I'm enjoying everything that I'm attracting at the moment.
Yeah, beautiful. So where, if people want to find out more about your coaching programs, I know you're about to start a new round of your 12, is it 12 week program?
Yep.
Where would they find more information about that?
So a lot of the chat that I kind of do happens through Instagram, and I'm a big believer that you want to make sure it's a good fit for both. So, and you know, when working with clients, I want to make sure that I'm a good fit for them, which is obviously the most important thing, and vice versa, that they're a good fit for me. So to kind of get a feel for the way I go about things, Instagram's a good touch point. So just my name, Blake Wald Thompson there, and then the website, blakewaldthompson.com, are the two best avenues to kind of get a feel for how I go about things.
Beautiful. And tell me, the 12-week program, it is, what are you doing for 12 weeks? What are you, what's the hap?
What's that? So it's a mix of small group training or small group coaching and one-on-one coaching. So it's a mix of, you know, as I said before, group calls, and then every few weeks we have a one-on-one call to kind of knuckle down on the things that are individually blocking them. But it really is a case of giving them an understanding of self, a better awareness, you know, ownership, as I kind of said earlier, then understanding the blocks, how we clear those, and then giving them their own toolkit that they can go out into the world and feel kind of empowered that any block, trauma, trigger that comes up, they know how to move through that and move forward. So it's a really cool kind of program, and I do feel that, you know, post the 12 weeks, these guys have an amazing toolkit and understanding of how they work as a human, and when blocks come up, how to deal with them. And really, you know, for me, self-mastery is more empowering than anything. And when you start to gain a better understanding of self and how to navigate through that, you all of a sudden kind of have an opportunity to scale up your world pretty quickly. Mm. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool program that I'm pretty proud of, and constantly evolving it and tweaking it to make it even more impactful.
Awesome. Well, I know that Holly's done it or is doing it. Has she done it?
She's into week 11.
Oh, okay. She's loving it. She raves awesome. About it all the time and how transformational it's been for her. So that's some good, honest feedback. I'll put the link in the show notes for it, because it kicks off in 2 weeks, did you say?
Yep, 2 weeks' time.
Awesome. So good. Well, Blake, thank you so much for chatting to me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And
thanks for having me, George.
Nice to not have you screaming at me to do more burpees.
Yeah, I can see how this is slightly nicer occasion for you.
Have you caught this week's episode of The Middle with my beautiful co-host Holly as a party? If you haven't, this week we're chatting about conscious relationships. Yeah, we're talking about whether or not opposites attract, whether or not you need a spiritual partner if you're on your own spiritual journey. We also talk about Game of Thrones because I freaking love that show. And Holly guides us through her experience with breath work. If you don't know what that is, You're going to love this episode. Here is a little sneak peek.
We're so opposite. Trent doesn't even use social media. Like, I'm telling you, George, his last post was about 6 years ago. What is that? What is that? Like, I'm up at him all the time. I'm like, babe, you didn't even acknowledge our wedding on Facebook or Instagram. What the fuck?
Did it even happen?
If it wasn't posted about, especially the Leo in me who loves to be praised and adored publicly, it's something I'm working on. Blake tells me that that's a spiritual cop-out. I'm really working on it.
Oh, wow. Keep it real, Blake.
Yeah, he's really, like, he tells me what I fucking need to hear, not what I want to hear. Also, hard to swallow. But, yeah, it's been, to be honest, the last year for Trenny and I, our year of marriage, has been the most... I'm going to use the word challenging in our entire relationship. And I really wanted to kind of open this discussion around conscious relationship and around opposites attracting, because I get asked it all the time, Jords, how do Trent and I work when Trent isn't in the work? And I say that with inverted commas. And it's something that, to be honest, we have been, as a couple, really navigating that space of, the last 18 months for me have been my biggest months of growth at a personal level and at a soul level in not just our entire relationship, but in my entire life. And I look at our video from our wedding, and the woman walking down the aisle to Trent and the woman I am today are very different women.
That's so interesting, you know, and I've thought about it often because I think back to my high school sweetheart. Like, if we had stayed together, and we were so madly in love, but if we had stayed together, oh my God, like, I can't even imagine, because we're both entirely different human beings. So it's always fascinated me, and I have quite a few friends that are very similar to you in that they've been with their partner since high school, pretty much.
Yeah.
Is how do you evolve and grow together? And at what point, like, what parts of the relationship is it okay to grow apart? And what parts of the relationship is it really important that you're growing at the same speed or at least in alignment?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.